ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 76 Hunger Games.
Hello and welcome to episode 92 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So we've got two reviews for you today. Our first one is for our Hot Topic section, and it's a brief chat about the movie The Night Before, and then we're going to go into our full review of The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. So first up is The Night Before. Angie, you've got that one.
All right, here is the synopsis. On Christmas Eve, three lifelong friends, two of whom are Jewish, spend the night in New York City looking for the holy grail of Christmas parties. I did not realize two of them were Jewish until right now.
I was just going to ask.
But the three friends are played by Seth Rogen, who is obviously one of the Jews, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who I guess must be the other one, because the other one is Anthony Mackie.
And his mom's Catholic, they make that clear.
Yeah, so I guess...
Do they not clarify if Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character is Jewish or not in the movie?
I remember that never coming up.
IMDb fail. We were due for one of those.
But anyway, this is directed by Jonathan Levine, who directed Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 50-50. He's also known for The Whackness and All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. So The Night Before is, you know, it's a holiday comedy, and it's being a holiday comedy and being a Jonathan Levine movie, it's kind of sentimental. And I think the thing that people are going to be kind of across the board on is how much you can stomach his sort of like mix of goofy and sentimental, because parts of this movie plays like a stoner comedy like that you would see Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg direct, like The Interview or This Is the End, and then other parts of it are kind of like really, and I guess sometimes it's not a good fit with them trying to be a little bit more serious and a little bit more sentimental, because all three of the guys have like sort of a personal issue going on.
The movie keeps jumping back and forth between hard R-rated comedy and like Hallmark movie, and I don't think that it needed to feel like two desperate, like disparate sections, because like, you know, Harold and Kumar did a Christmas movie and I found that movie weirdly touching while always being wacky, but it's like anytime this movie has to do something heartfelt or emotional, we like drop any attempt at comedy and like everyone just has to be like, no, but real talk, guys. And like that kind of bummed me out, because I thought that, you know, it was a really funny movie that had a lot of good ideas, just kind of too many ideas. But for me, one of the scenes that I liked a whole lot was actually when they managed to merge a real problem that one of the characters has with genuine comedy, which is like, we mentioned Seth Rogen. He plays his wife is expecting, and so he's like on the outside super calm and cool about being a dad, but as soon as he takes a shit ton of drugs like you do, he freaks out and starts having all these terrors and fears about like, what if I'm not a good dad, what could happen. And there's one part where he like leaves himself a video message of him explaining that he's going to be a garbage father and they have to get rid of the baby because it's just never going to work out. And like, it's a really small moment in the movie that worked really well for me, because it channeled a genuine fear and a genuine moment into something funny. And I thought that that's where the movie worked best. But the problem is that so much of the movie is like everything screeches to a stop so Jonathan can, so Joseph Gordon-Levitt can talk about his dead parents again.
I think it's actually a problem that I've had with a lot of Jonathan Levine, the director. A lot of his movies have had that problem. Like, that was my problem with 50-50. For some reason, I think that maybe I went into this with lowered expectations, because I haven't loved any of his movies. Like, there's always just a little something that keeps it from clicking for me. And I think it is kind of his inability to balance funny and sentimental. And I think because I had lower expectations, I actually really like this one. Like, it's true, the movie does kind of grind to a halt when it's time to get quote-unquote serious, but I thought that there was enough of it. I feel like at those points I had enough, like, I was coasting on enough goodwill that I went for it. The other thing I wanted to point out, we shouldn't talk too much longer about this movie, but the other thing I wanted to point out is that this movie did a lot better job with its female characters than I expected.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, really. Especially compared to his last movie.
I was going to ask about the supporting characters, because they talked a lot about that on set.
But they don't have anything to do.
Like, Alana Glazer gets something to do. The other ones just get to be, like, I don't know. You put Jillian Bell in a movie and she has, like, one funny scene. That made me mad. Lizzie Caplan has nothing funny to do.
But it's not a movie about them. Like, it's not even supposed to be an ensemble movie. It's a movie about these three guys. They're supposed to be supporting characters, so I didn't have a problem with that. And I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised at the way that they managed to be. They are, like, you know, they're the love interests and girlfriends in the comedy. So it's, yeah, there's a limit to how much they're really allowed to do. But at the same time, I thought that, you know, between the material and the actresses, they were given as much as you could possibly, they managed to get as much out of those characters as you possibly could. I mean, compare that especially to, like, 50-50, where Anna Kendrick is, like, a terrible psychiatrist and Bryce Dallas Howard is, like, a shrew.
Yeah, I guess they're not unlikable, but I just want to, we have to move on, but I want to say, I think it's an okay movie, but the reason I think anyone should see it is Michael Shannon as a drug dealer
yes.
is really fucking funny and amazing, and I would say, honestly, I would recommend it for Michael Shannon alone.
That's a great segue to The Hunger Games. Not really.
Sure.
But okay, let's just do it anyway. So wait, do you guys recommend people seeing the movie overall?
Yes, and I suspect it's going to be on rotation in HBO, like, by next year, so
yeah.
It's a good movie for that.
All right, well, maybe I'll wait till then. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the big release this weekend, which is probably going to wind up being one of the biggest releases of the year, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. So here is the always wonderful IMDb synopsis. As the War of Panem escalates to the descriptor... Wait, I'm going to reread that and widen my thing so words are not cut in half. Oh, that's not going to change. All right. As the War of Panem escalates to the destruction of other districts by the capital, Katniss Everdeen, the reluctant leader of the rebellion, must bring together an army against President Snow while all she holds dear hangs in the balance. That is fairly accurate. I loved The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, and if you don't know, I'm kind of obsessed with the franchise as a whole. I've been covering it since the day that it kind of started to become a popular thing when the book was first picked up for an adaptation and then all the casting happened. So I've really been writing an insane amount about this movie, and I just love the fact that I can be so involved in a franchise and spend so much time covering and promoting a franchise, and then it's actually good, because I can't even begin to tell you how disappointing it is when you write thousands and thousands of words about something or like get locked into covering a certain something and then it sucks. But this franchise has just been fantastic, I think, from start to finish. I think the only thing that I would say is I can kind of understand people who complain that this doesn't feel like a complete movie because it's Mockingjay Part 2. It is supposed to pair with Mockingjay Part 1. And I think when you pair them together, I don't know who's going to sit down for like a 5-hour epic, but I think they paired together exceptionally well. And this was exactly the way that I wanted the franchise to end.
Well, let's dig into that, because that's my problem, is that this film picks up literally moments after the last film. Like, Katniss has a very bruised throat. PETA's just choked her out. Bad things. We pick up right from there. I get it. And that's the low point, not just in that story, but, like, in the whole series. Like, the kid who has been trying to save her for 3 fucking movies just tried to murder her. So, like, it's a dark place. And I get that. But I was kind of bothered how this doesn't feel like a movie unto itself. And for me, even though I watched Part 1 before I went to the theater to watch Part 2, I still expected to see a movie with beats of a movie as opposed to what felt like to me one protracted final act. And that got kind of tedious for me. I really like the action stuff. Like, once they get to the Capitol and they're in pods and things, like, that totally works for me, and that was really fun. But what I thought was so disappointing in this movie is that Francis Lawrence forgot to bring the fun and the whimsy and the joy of the past movies into this one at all. And, like, I understand that some people are going to be like, but it's a dystopian movie and this is a super serious moment. But, like, there's a fucking wedding in this movie. And it's a wedding that we have wanted as fans for a while now, because you know you're never going to see PETA and Katniss get married because that shit's not in the books, right? So you're not going to see that. So, spoilers, I guess, for books that have been out for ages. But anyway, so you get Finnick and Annie's wedding, which they've been teasing with promotional stuff and all this marketing. But in the movie, it's literally like Katniss wanders from a war room conversation into the wedding. And it's like, we didn't get to, like, rejoice in that moment. And, like, I feel like the movie needed to punctuate moments of joy or lightness so that the darkness had a balance. And instead, it just becomes, like, dark, dark, dark. And I got bored.
Well, I most certainly didn't get bored, but I understand your complaint about missing the levity, too, because that was something that Haymitch and Effie always brought to the movies, whether or not it was, like, a dark or a happy moment. They were always mm-hmm. there to do that, so, you know, it did feel like that was missing, especially when Francis Lawrence went out of his way to ensure that that was in Mockingjay Part 1. But then again, with where the story goes, like, there really is no room to cut to them, you know? Like, I think it would have ruined
There's
the flow
no
of the story
to them,
if they did
but
that.
Like, you know, there's, like, a moment where they give Cressida a joke and things. I just felt like there needed to be something. And as it is, I just feel like this movie is so one note that that's what bugged me about it. Like, more than even it not feeling like a movie unto itself is the fact that the beginning and ending are kind of one note. And that was a real bummer for me.
I think that that kind of ties into the feeling that it's half a movie, because I don't think that that would bother you so much if you had processed this as a 4-hour movie where the ending just gets more serious than the rest of it. I think basically it doesn't work as a movie, like as it's a movie itself. It does, but I think it works really well as the ending to a four film saga. You know, you're right, like I would have liked a little bit more levity, but at the same time, I think what I liked about it, the reason it didn't feel boring to me is that I feel like a lot of times when films sacrifice levity, what happens is that they lose any semblance of personality, and I didn't get that here. Like, it still felt like the world and the characters had a lot of personality, so even though it didn't have as much humor, and even though I probably would have welcomed a little bit more, it didn't bother me as much. What did bother me is fucking Gale. That guy has been, he's been useless the whole time. He's played by a wooden block.
Known as Liam Hemsworth.
You know, these movies have made it into my top 10 of the year every single time. Everyone has, but one of my only complaints is Liam Hemsworth. If they would have just taken him out, like, I mean, but really, did he need to be in any of these movies?
I understood his purpose in one and maybe two, but I feel like as the series went on,
in those?
Well, she needed like something to hang on to from home, because like
she had Prim and her mother. Her connection with her sister was like a billion and one times stronger than anything she had with Gale. You know, that might have been part of the problem too. I was so charmed by their relationship that like it made Liam Hemsworth like lack of emotion and all of that like 10 times worse.
I don't know who to blame. And like, is Gale useless because he's played by Liam Hemsworth, or does Liam Hemsworth seem useless because he's playing Gale? I don't know.
I think it's
chicken and egg.
Here's the thing. Because in the books, Gale and Peeta thing, I got it. Gale, it's like in Brooklyn. Each guy represents like a path and a person Katniss can be. You know what I mean? I get that. But in the movie, like, Josh Hutcherson is charming. I mean, admittedly, he's a little doofy, and he's always just like, Katniss, I need rescued, or whatever. I get it, but that's what the role is, whatever. But, like, Gale, Liam Hemsworth, as soon as they cast him, I was like, maybe he's more charismatic than a wet sponge, but I don't get it. And over the course of 3 years and 4 movies, he has never been anything beyond blandsome.
He's
just a dullish... He is.
Heard that term somewhere else? Blandsome?
That's a good term.
I'm not going to take credit for that. But I did refer to him as that in my review. Because seriously, what the fuck? So like every time, because he's so dull, you know Katniss isn't going to pick him. So then every time in the movie he starts talking about like, hey Katniss, what about me? Peanut, like, shut the fuck up. I don't care.
I will point out that your complaint was like, oh, the ending is just war and it's all drudgery and it's terrible. That is that's the other flavor that they give you in this movie is Gale, like everyone being like, we're dying out here. And then Gale being like, but what about my crush on Katniss? Like,
yeah, what this movie needed more of. Friend zone bitching. I can't.
He's not bitching about being friend zoned. He's just weirdly focused on something completely irrelevant in a time of war when people are dying. To be fair,
also just a little weird how in the middle of that whole big epic finale that they had to stop so that they could say and like spell out what we knew was already happening. Like, what was the point of that? And then in their stupid non-whisper voices too, it's like, of course Katniss is listening. Whether she was awake or not at that point, you were going to wake her by talking and she was going to hear
everything. That was one of the laughs the movie has though. Because Katniss, like, hears the two boys that she's in love with talking about her and she does this like face like, I'm sleeping. I'm not listening. And that was like one of the few moments of levity this movie had.
There are multiple scenes where there are like small rooms full of people that are trying to sleep and then two characters talking at normal volume, and it bothered me more than it should have. But that's a minor detail. Let's move on.
Angie, as an appreciator of sleep, is like, you guys are the goddamn worst.
Yeah, no, they're in a high stress situation. They're in a war. Like, people need to get whatever sleep they can, and they're trying. If two assholes wouldn't just fucking stop talking about their feelings of a girl that's 10 feet away.
Gale's like, I haven't slept for days, and I thought, no, because you guys yammer on all goddamn night.
It's like, it reminds me of when you're in, like, summer camp, and the counselors are like, just lay down and shut up, and I don't care if you're not sleeping. Sorry, but we're getting, like, really, really super off track.
But I mean, I think that is really impressive in this, because Hunger Games has always had to walk a fine line with the violence, because even though it's an incredibly violent franchise, it's a PG-13 franchise. So you need it to be impactfully violent, but not viscerally violent, because then the MPA is going to be like, oh, whatever. So in this, I actually thought that the traps in the Capitol are nightmarish. Like, they're very upsetting.
It's about as dark and violent as you can get and keep it PG-13. Like, they come up with some creative ways to not show that much actual blood, because that's a big thing for the MPAA.
There is actually. I mean, is there really any blood except for what might be smeared on, like, someone's face after
the
taking
very,
the punch
or something like that? There's a little bit of blood. Very, like, literally little. The final.
Yeah.
Like, there's one, at one point, this guy, you watch him just get fucking decimated, and he just kind of, like, shatters, because it's, like,
you
a weird
see
weapon.
I think
he's
you see that in the trailer.
He just becomes dust. That was very upsetting.
It was also just very upsetting the way that it was worked into that sequence, too, because it's, like, you know, they get out of one thing, and you're almost, like, ready to, like, sit back and take a breath, and then all of a sudden, it comes out of nowhere. I thought
and
that
also,
was
like,
really well
the
done.
The reaction on Natalie Dormer's face when that happens really sells that moment, because Cressida's so calm, and then she gets this look of, like, what the fuck just happened? And you're like,
she's,
oh, I know, right?
She's like, great in this, because she's had, like, a little nothing role, you know, all throughout Mockingjay leading up to this, but, like, all of a sudden, she started, and, like, same with Castor and Pollux. I mean, they were obviously, you know, being a little manipulative with the scenes that they gave the two of them. But it was just kind of like a really nice way to make them feel important and not
like
props
anymore. It gave the
movie
some personal stakes outside of the ones we already know. It like built more layers, and I liked all that. All the stuff
that's
in the Capitol I thought was
but
great.
But that's why I think the really dark and like not having as much levity and just focusing on the war, I think that worked really well. Just because, I mean, they can do it at this point. They built up these characters enough. And this movie almost... I mean, this movie gave what's happened in the past three movies so much more, like, meaning and value. I mean, you really couldn't have ended this with too much levity, because then it kind of would have felt like they were taking away from all the crazy shit that went down in the past
three
films.
But, like, last week we talked about how good Spotlight is, in part because it managed to take such a dark topic and bring some humanity and some warmth into it, and it made it
a
richer tapestry.
Yeah, but that's
warmth.
What they did with Mockingjay, and that's why in that's what they did in Mockingjay Part 1, and that's
totally.
Why in Mockingjay Part 2, like it almost all this stuff almost hurt that much more, and I felt the need for like President Snow's regime to be gone. I mean, I wanted to say something else about that topic, but we would need a spoiler section for that. But that's kind of why, like, at the end here, I really just was, like, 110% behind everything that Katniss did, because all of this needed to end.
No, totally. My thing is just that I think you need those punctuations and tension and some moments of levity so that the audience can kind of reset a little bit, because there were people laughing at parts in the movie I don't think were intended to be laughed at, and I think that's just because the audience is so geared up, they don't know what to do. So I feel like it tonally made a major mistake. That's my big problem. And so for me, and I know it may seem like a small problem, but for me, it made me really enjoy the middle part of the movie that wasn't, you know, that was about survival as opposed to just another terrible things are happening. But the beginning and the end just didn't work for me. And I was also disappointed, and this is not a spoiler because it's like my thing is that after the movie was totally over, I thought they would do what like Harry Potter did and Twilight did and Fast and Furious does, where it would be like, and here are the images of them through all the movies, and we would all kind of get to have that cathartic, and we did it as a fandom moment, but it just cuts to black and I'm like, oh.
But I like that better, because one of the things about the Hunger Games that I think makes it unique as a franchise is how like the ending is kind of, it's not just a completely like, and then, you know, Voldemort got killed and everyone lived happily ever after. Frodo dropped the ring and that volcano thing and now everyone's happy and Sam went off to marry that girl he pretended he's been in love with this whole time. But that's one thing I like about the Hunger Games is that it doesn't really let you off the hook even at the end. Like, you know, yeah, things, it's a happy ending, but it's not a completely happy ending. That's actually something I've always admired about it, and one thing that I think it does better than even a lot of adult franchises.
Well, I don't want, and now let's touch base with every character. I really just wanted a montage of, like, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, and like a photo of her being beautiful, and then like, you know, whatever. Like, that's what I wanted.
I'm
wanted
sure
that
you can
kind
find
of
that on
catharsis.
The internet. I don't know.
I'm sure you could find like thousands of those on the internet.
Yeah, if you want a photo montage of Jennifer Lawrence being beautiful to yours, I'm pretty sure YouTube has you covered. It's fine.
I don't know. I liked it. I'm not. I actually thought these movies were getting better with each one. So my expectations for this one were very high, and I was let down. I'm bummed out about it.
Catching Fire is still very much my favorite, but my expectations have been exceeded with each thing. Like, I really, when they announced that Mockingjay was being split into two movies, that that choice had gotten like such a stigma because of Twilight and Harry Potter. It was almost like Hobbit. Everyone just assumed it would be for a cash grab. But like these two movies, and I think part of the reason is the choice to split them up into two movies, just made the material from the book that much better. It really needed more time. I think Mockingjay Part 1 and 2, like, as a whole, is much stronger than Mockingjay the book.
I agree because I think in the book, like, the first two books are kind of similar, and then this third one just takes this jarring turn, and you're just like, wait, what happened? And then it's over. And I feel like because they, like, managed to space it out, it did feel like you got a lot more, you got a lot better sense of what District 13 is, like, what is going on outside the arena. You got, you know, you actually got to adjust to this new status quo instead of the story just being like, we're here now. Okay, bye.
That's just the ending.
What's the overall here? I mean, I think mine's pretty obvious.
People should absolutely see it. It's not like, you know, you've invested all this time. Go. I'm just kind of saying I think people should manage their expectations a little bit because I feel like the audience is required to do a little more heavy lifting than I would like.
Oh, you sound so freaking lazy, Christy. I'm with Christy. Like, yeah, you've seen the other three movies and you're not going to see this one. You should watch it, but you should know that you kind of have to have seen at least the last two movies. It's not going to make any sense if you're just like, I've never seen a Hunger Games movie before. Why don't I start with the last one?
Well, I obviously couldn't recommend this enough. I'm going to go see it and pay for it again because I want to support this franchise and I love it. I'm sad that it's going to be gone. And I am half-heartedly hoping that there's discussions about continuing it at some point, but, you know, that's just like me being selfish, so maybe I shouldn't.
They'll try
to.
They'll work something out. I don't know.
I know they will. But it's like I want to leave it as is, but at the same time, I'm like sad to see it go. But you guys can all enjoy Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 this weekend. That is a wrap on episode 92 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know the deal. You can find us on iTunes where you can subscribe and also rate and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. You can like us on Facebook. We have our Twitter, which is Popcorn Prosecco, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter, at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is at PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Dude, I am such a fan.
Wow.
Sorry. I'm like jizzing all over you. I'm getting like jizzy. Sorry.
No, jizz all over me. I like that shit.